What's happening, everyone? Welcome back. It's Jay Scott, and it is The Hook Rocks, the ultimate rock community podcast. Thanks again for tuning in. We always do appreciate when you do. Please write us a review, particularly a five-star review when you're done listening. We do appreciate it. We are part of the Pantheon Podcast Network, a great network of music-related podcasts, including the official Metallica podcast that you can catch on pantheonpodcast.com. as well as on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Pantheon Pods. And you can do the same on all three of those platforms with The Hook Rocks. Please give us a follow and also subscribe or like wherever you podcast. We've got a great lineup so far in to start the new year off. We began with our top 25 albums of 2023, a two-part series that just breaks down like over 200 albums and just talks a lot about new music. And we're not rock elitist here or music elitist where we focus on things that really no one's ever heard of. We're rock fans. We talk about rock music. So please enjoy those episodes, as well as the recent interview with Joe Satriani, Todd Damon-Kerns, Sophie Lloyd, the guitar player for Machine Gun Kelly, the Gems, the great female Swedish band from Thunder Mother, the three gals who left Thunder Mother after the Scorpions tour. And most recently, please check out the interview with Scott Holiday of Rival Sons. My next guest, I had on a few years ago, way back when we first started this podcast, and he was a member of one of my favorite bands growing up, and that is the band Dokken. And I've had Don on in October, I had George on in November, and I'm secretly plotting the reunion of the Dokken lineup. No, I'm just kidding, but it is Jeff Pilson, and we've got some music to talk about. And what's happening, man? How are you?
Well, hey, great to be here.
Thank you for doing this. Thank you for the time. I do appreciate it. We've got some new music that you're involved with to talk about. It's Revolution Saints and their new single, and End Machine as well. Two things kind of going on at once.
Yeah.
What, you know, when you're involved in these projects, obviously you did the album with Revolution Saints last year, and you've been doing the stuff with End Machine. You've got a relationship with George that is just, you know, decades long. When you're choosing projects like this, how do you choose them? What does it take for you to be interested in them?
Well, musical compatibility, and you know, something that excites me musically, and people that excite me. I mean, you know, with Revolution Saints, when I got the call, you know, to work with Dean and Joel, you know, that's a no-brainer. I mean, I knew them both personally, and I'd worked with Joel, so I knew how great he is, how professional he is, and just, I mean, Joel is just outstanding. I mean, you couldn't say anybody is a better guitar player. I mean, he can do anything. He's just phenomenal. He writes and he's great. He's a hell of a great guy. That's a no-brainer. Dean's voice, I love Dean's voice. I mean, I love his drumming. I mean, his drumming is world-class, the best and everything else, but to have that voice on top of it, his voice moves me. And it was, so the opportunity to work with those two guys, that was easy. Absolutely. You know, of course I'll do it. With End Machine, you know, I mean, it takes nothing to get George and I to want to work together. We, you know, we do it all the time because we just have a great chemistry. We have a great time making music, and we always feel like what we come up with is, you know, that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. And that's why I do this. You know, I mean, there's, you know, it's not for the money or the fame or anything like that. I do it because I love it. And I just love that. So all the projects, Black Swan, Revolution Saints, End Machine, they're all people I love to work with, music I love to make, and just a great collaboration. And that's what I long for.
When you think about the relationship with you and George, I mean, there has to be an extreme level of comfort there too, as well. You guys really know each other.
Yeah.
You know what makes each other tick. And that's got to be great in when you're involved in the creative process, when you've got someone, when you look at someone and you've known them for 40 years. That's got to be incredible.
Well, it is. And it is comfort. There is definitely some comfort there. And then there's just the, you know, the brutal honesty is great. I mean, you know, we can be really, really honest with one another, and there's no barriers. You know, it's just, it's kind, there's no egos. There's no nothing. We come in, boom. And yeah, that's a great feeling. And just, you know, the musical mind reading, that's really cool stuff too.
Did you ever think when Dokken disbanded that you would continue to working with George for this long period of time? Because in the music industry, it's very hard to maintain relationships just because, you know, once you're not in a band anymore or you're moving on to different projects, you get pulled in different ways. It's hard to stay in touch. It's hard to stay on top of those types of things. But again, did you ever think that you'd still be creating music with George 40 years later?
Well, nobody ever thought in terms of 40 years later. I mean, when we, you know, when we broke up in 89, you know, actually, I did hope to be working with George. You know, that my hope was that we would join forces after Dokken, and then it, for various reasons, that didn't happen. But I think in the back of my mind, I kind of did know that I'd work with George again, just because we had a real solid chemistry, and we maintained our friendship. You know, even when he went off with the Lynch Mob and, you know, we went our separate ways, we still maintained contact. And, you know, and I loved Lynch Mob. So I was a big supporter, like, yay, yay, yay. So, yeah, I don't think I'm surprised, but who could have guessed it would go on this long? I mean, you know, no, I don't think anybody could have guessed that at the time.
And the music is still great, right? I mean, I think you guys, because of the relationship, push each other. I mean, you know, I look at George's playing, because obviously, you know, the guitar player is always front and center with music, especially with rock.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm amazed at how he still looks to stay out of the box and keep evolving. Yeah. And
yeah, he's the real deal.
Yeah. And I imagine too with when he's working with you, there's that comfort where he feels it's okay to do that. Cause I think maybe sometimes you get involved in projects and that artist or that producer wants George to be what George was 30 years ago. You know what I mean? And I don't know if he's that same player anymore.
Well, yeah.
I mean, he's great though.
Yeah. No, people evolve. I mean, I think the comfort when he and I work together is, you know, oftentimes we do have a specific thing that we're trying to achieve. And I think he kind of trusts me in guiding us down what he would also agree would be the right path. Because yeah, he wants to go out of the box. He wants to try different things, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, you know? So I think he trusts me in that respect. And that's kind of one of the functions that I perform when we do work together. Because that's the whole secret right there, keeping it fresh and yet keeping it in line with what people are expecting. You know, it's a product. End Machine is a product, and we do want to come up with something that we know the fans are going to like. But it has to be from our hearts, and it has to be real, and it has to be something that we feel, inspired by. So that's the whole trick, keeping it fresh and inspired while yet still kind of following the path that we've created. And that's a tricky thing. But yeah, I think when George and I get together, we trust each other to kind of stay in that zone.
My definition of End Machine is it's very modern, right? It's relevant sounding, but it also, to me, if Dokken continued for these last 40 years, this is probably what it would sound like.
Well, and that's kind of what we feel too. I mean, we feel like, because, you know, especially when George and I do get together to write music, we do have a thing that we kind of tend to come up with. And we've varied and we've gone off in different directions over time because we're artists. We want to do that. But there is something that we come up with, and we know when we're in that zone. And yeah, I feel like, I mean, why wouldn't it sound like Dokken 40 years later? Because it's the same guys writing the music. So, you know, kind of makes sense. And that's where Girish is such a godsend to this whole thing, because he brings in an element. You know, I think it's safe to say he was a Dokken fan, as well as all those other great bands from the era. And so he brings that fan knowledge to it. That's pretty cool. And yet he himself has such a distinct and unique talent. And it is a younger, fresher perspective. So I think it's the perfect combination of elements to get that sound that we're looking for, which, yeah, if it sounds like Dokken 40 years later, we're very happy with that.
I remember when I read the news that Girish was joining End Machine, and I was a big fan of Girish and the Chronicles. And
good.
I thought that it was just a perfect match to really kind of collaborate and do this project?
Well, that's how we felt. I mean, when we heard his voice, Serafino from Frontiers, you know, is the one that kind of turned us onto him. And when we heard his voice, we were pretty sure, and we knew some of the stuff he had written. We were pretty sure it was going to work, but you never really know until you do it. But man, did he ever come through. Wow. The guy is just amazing.
When you turn to Revolution Saints and you hear the music for that, it's music that really isn't appreciated more these days, right? I mean, it's, you know, you've got a lot of different subgenres, and pop music is completely different and rock music is completely different. And there's not really a big corner for melodic rock in the U.S. You know, it's a European thing now. It's other countries that still appreciate it. But in the U.S., you don't hear that music like the Journey-esque, the Foreigner type stuff that was really popular late 70s throughout the 80s. Right. And hearing that music again, you can't help but feel good when you hear it, because it was a wonderful part of music that, for whatever reason, is no longer viable. And that's a shame. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think you're right as far as it's very underappreciated. I mean, you know, listen, the U.S. tends to be more gimmick or trend oriented than Europe. Europe is very, you know, when they like something, they just like it, period. They don't have to worry about whether it's cool or not. In the U.S., there's a trend thing going on, and the business in the U.S. is geared towards that trendy thing. So there's not a lot of business opportunities for melodic rock. So it becomes more rare and people don't hear it as much. And I agree with you. I think it is. I think it's a very relevant, valid music. But the machinery in the U.S. doesn't gear to it. So I agree with you there. I think that's why bands like Revolution Saints just need to keep doing what they're doing. I do think there's a bigger audience out there that hopefully somewhere we'll find, because I think there's a lot of people that just don't know about this stuff that would love it if they heard it. So my hope is that people like yourself who are promoting, that more and more of that can happen. And I hope we can reach a bigger potential audience, because I really do feel it's there.
Why do you think the quote unquote machine has dismiss that genre? I mean, because it was so big and it was so popular and it created so many great songs and bands. And it's like, why can't we still have this?
Because the backlash that happened in the early 90s to all that kind of stuff was so severe that it really affected the business. And it affected the business model and how business was conducted, and it changed things. So, again, the machinery reacts to the trends, and it shouldn't be that way. The machinery should be its own path, but it's not. I guess that makes sense, because they're just trying to make money, you know, and so they're going to just reflect that, which is why labels like Frontiers are so important, because they're representing this music unapologetically, and that's what needs to happen. How much bigger it can grow, I don't know, but I do believe it can grow more. And I know Frontiers is committed to trying to make it grow more. So again, I think it's a matter of coercing whatever out of the machinery we can to increase the exposure and promotion for this kind of music. There's probably a ceiling to it, but I think the ceiling is further away than where we're at now. And let's just hope it can be.
I've had this conversation quite a bit on this podcast about the machine. And when you look at today's music versus the past is so important and integral to what is happening now in music, right? I mean, without what happened in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, a lot of the stuff that is popular would not be. Yet the machine forgets about that, right? It doesn't value that like the fans do and say, hey, you know, I mean, the fact that the Beatles can release a single this in 2023 and have so many downloads, and like Led Zeppelin is probably more popular than they were when they were around. And these bands, you know, that are continue to have this resurgence. And there's a reason for that, because they wrote great songs. They were great performers. They moved the needle. And
right.
It's like someone flicked a switch and just said, no more. And it's like, I don't understand. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I do know what you mean. And I mean, again, it's all about money and it's all about, you know, greed. And you know, once rock stopped selling, once current rock stopped selling, I think the machine just, they did hit the off switch, ignoring the catalog sales of gigantic bands. I mean, even Foreigner, we still sell massive catalog. We're still way up there in the catalog sales. You know, at one point, I know we were number 7 in Legacy Act sales. I don't know if that's still the case. It goes up and down, you know, it shifts. But yeah, there's a huge market out there, for people that love this music, but the exposure to new music is so minimal, you know, the Beatles were lucky. I mean, they're a big enough band that when they come out with a new single and they're able to, and they did saturate the media, you know, they really did. And they did come out on a major label and all that. So, they had the promotion machine behind them. I don't know if Led Zeppelin came out with a new song, they'd probably get something like that. But it would have to be Led Zeppelin with Robert Plant and, you know, it would have to be that. So I don't know. I think the machinery just makes the calculation. No, it's old. We're not going to get behind it. And I think that's a mistake. I think that there is a way bigger market for it. But again, I think that's why Frontiers is so important. And why I just hope Frontiers is able to raise the stakes. And I know that that's what they're trying to do. Let's see if we can get to those people who would potentially love this music, but they just don't know about it. And that's the goal.
I think that is coming sooner rather than later. And the reason why I think that is because when you look at the landscape of bands that are touring, a lot of these legacy acts, namely Foreigner's, you know, finishing up their farewell tour this year, there's going to be a vacuum of fans with no bands to go see. And they're going to turn to something that is part of that familiar sound that they like. And yeah. I think within the next decade, you're going to see more fans, because of the lack of new music coming out with the Legacy X, try to seek out bands that are part of that genre that they love.
Well, I hope so. And I think you're right. And yeah, there probably will be a vacuum for live performance, but you know what? Somebody will fill it. Somebody will figure out a way to fill it. And you know, I mean, perhaps, I mean, maybe tribute acts will get really popular. That would make kind of sense. Who knows? I mean, I think because people are still going to want to tour and people are going to still want to. I mean, as long as there's money in it, people are going to do it. So if there's a vacuum to fill where there's money to be made, somebody will do it.
For you, you know, as I just mentioned, Foreigner is completing their farewell tour this year. Have you decided what path you're going to go once Foreigner is done touring?
Well, I mean, not completely. I mean, there are still open-ended questions. I mean, I know that Foreigner's not ending. I mean, you know, what we're doing is we're not going to be doing the long 9-month tours anymore. That's basically what we mean by a farewell tour. So starting in 2025, if we play, which hasn't been 100% worked out yet, but I have a feeling we're going to do some shows in 2025, but they're going to be select dates, you know, probably corporate shows, things like that. Maybe in a concentrated period of time, who knows? There's also new music that Foreigner has not finished that I would love to see finished. And so I'm hoping that in 2025, we can do some of that. That would be great. Even if it's just a couple songs, I'd love to release those. And I think the organization would love to. We just have to make sure that the songs are up to the quality, you know, to the standard that, you know, has been set. And then I do love to record and produce in here. So probably more of that will be happening for me in 2025. My schedule will open up. So maybe there's possibilities of somebody like Revolution Saints or M Machine doing shows. Although I always like to put the cautionary tale that logistically those things are very hard to pull off. But there will be more time. And like, for instance, George is doing his farewell tour with the Lynch Mob this year. He doesn't plan on doing long tours with the Lynch Mob anymore. So he may have more time in 2025. And if that's the case, maybe we can do something. Who knows?
Is there, for you, being in this business so long and having that 2025 approaching where you're going to have a lot more time than you've probably had in the last 40 years, right? Does, with that unknown, does that worry you? Does it excite you? How do you feel about that?
Not a little of all. I mean, I'm definitely excited by it because I'm really ready to not be on the road 9 months a year. That much I'm very, very excited for. I wouldn't say worried because I know I'll have plenty to do. Worried's not the right word. What's the word? Just anxious, a little bit anxious, you know, I guess is the word, because there are unknowns involved. But the excitement outweighs the anxiousness because I'm really excited to have a little bit of an open-ended schedule. I mean, that would be wonderful to have that. But who knows? Projects can come along. And again, when I'm in here, I'm a happy guy. So we'll see.
And if all else fails, Jeff, I mean, there's always yard work to do, right?
Yes, although I'm really bad at it. But yeah, definitely the honey-do list is pretty large here.
yeah. When that moment comes, when Foreigner, gets off the road and you're figuring out your 2025, do you have, I mean, obviously you mentioned with Revolution Saints, the people that you work with, M Machine, all that kind of stuff. Black Swan.
Yeah.
Is there a thing that a project has to have or something has to have for you to be a part of? Besides this, the people.
Yeah, no, it has to be musically exciting to me. If somebody came up and said, you know what, I want to do a Dixieland project. I take that back. I'm interested in all kinds of music, but I mean, the point being, I have to be excited by the prospect of the music that it's going to produce. And in all the projects I'm in, I think the music's great. So of course, but yeah, it's about the music and what it's going to be.
Are you more inclined to pick a project where you have more of a creative responsibility in it versus one that's kind of set up and the infrastructure's already there?
Not necessarily, because with Revolution Saints, I was joining a project. And with Revolution Saints, I only play bass. I don't have to produce. It's a whole other thing. The two records I've done with them, the songs were already written. We are talking about doing some writing with Joel and I being involved with the writing for the next one, which would be great. I'd love that. But it's not a make or break thing for me where I have to be involved, because it's kind of nice coming in and just playing bass too. That's kind of nice to be able to kick back and just be the bass player. So no, that's not part of the criterion. The other projects I'm in, I am more involved as a producer, which I love as well. So I take each project by its own merits, and whatever role I'm to play in it, as long as I'm comfortable with it, I don't mind what that role is.
When you work with, George, you mentioned the Revolution Saints, M Machine has, you have more part of the creative process. Then you do something like the Heavy Hitters, one and two there too as well. And you're selecting cover songs. How do you and George pick through stuff to do when you guys do something like that?
We just brought in, both of us just brought in a huge list. And so did Brian Tishy, the drummer. He brought in a bunch of ideas too, some of which we did. And we we take the list and we start at the top and, we sit around with a couple of guitars and, can we come up with something that kind of works with this? And, oh, hey, I got a drum beat. And, that kind of thing. And it's really fun because the structure of the song is already together and it's already a great song. So if you start with a great song, it's It's just a matter of how do you interpret it? And if we feel we can interpret it in a way that we're doing it justice and coming up with something cool, that's how we pick it. And we just kind of went through one by one and did that.
You know, I mentioned early on in the conversation, I spoke with George in November, had Don on in October. It sounds like, you know, the train has left the station with any hopes of the members of Dokken reuniting for any shows or tour. Is that kind of how you way you see it too as well?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of detach from it. I know those guys have done shows together and I don't think there's going to be a whole lot more of those for some reason, but I don't think it's animosity really. It's not that. It's just, I mean, Don has his record out and, you know, he's wants to promote that. And I think Don wants to retire soon. I mean, he's 70. So my attitude is I leave the door open only because there is a part of me, I will be honest, that would love to do one last Dokken record and really do it right. But the logistics of that I recognize are very difficult. You know, Don lives in New Mexico now. I can't see either one of us traveling to work together long enough to collaborate. And my interest would be in us collaborating to do it. But having said that, who knows? I mean, I know that if George and I got in a room to write a Dokken record musically, that we would have no problem with that. And I think George kind of feels the same way. If it could happen, great, but looks logistically difficult. And if it doesn't happen, I'm not disappointed either. But like I say, I would love to do one last record. If we did shows, that'd be great, but it just doesn't seem like it's on the plate. So my answer is I'm open, but, you know, I don't see it happening. So we'll see.
If that is the case, right, and that doesn't happen, or if it does happen, are you comfortable with the band that you're known mostly for, the Dokken band? You know, are you comfortable with their legacy that you're a part of?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm very proud of our legacy. But I would, you know, that's why if we did one more record or if we played, I would want it to be good and up to the standards of our legacy, which I think would happen. Because when we did a song in 2016 together, I mean, the chemistry was instantaneous and it worked great. And we collaborated just like we did. I mean, our chemistry was there. So I believe we could do it. I believe we could come up with something great. But like I say, the logistics, I think, get in the way. Yeah, I mean, I'm very comfortable with our legacy. And if it didn't happen, yes, I'm comfortable. You know, we stood the test of time. Here it's 40 years later and people still love the songs. So that's an accomplishment that I'm very proud of. And yeah, I'm very happy with. As far as the reunion, any kind of a reunion, I would want it to be up to the standards of our legacy. And, you know, like I say, I just don't know if that could happen.
One final question. Outside of the projects that you're involved with, M Machine, Revolution Saints, and the tour with Foreigner this year, is there anything new on the horizon that you're involved with?
New? I am doing there's a progressive band that I had with Craig Goldie 30 years ago. And Scott Warren also was involved. And a drummer by the name of Tim Pedersen. And we did a bunch of music and we did a bunch of recording back then that was really great, but some of it we didn't finish. And so I'm actually currently finishing up some of the stuff that I'm doing, some of the stuff we did. And that's been really fun. So I'm hoping sometime, hopefully 2025, I can put out this record of this progressive group that we had. And I would love to blow people's minds because the music is, I mean, it's pretty progressive. There's a lot of progressive stuff going on, but I think we really, really came up with some inspired music. So I'd love to release that sometime in 2025. And that would be kind of a, no pun intended, a black swan event right there.
Well, Jeff, it's been a blast catching up with you. I appreciate your time and thank you very much for doing this.
Oh, my pleasure, man. It's been great. Thank you.
Thank you. Everyone, that is Jeff Pilsen. You can catch him with Foreigner, probably at a city local to you. And also check out the latest singles with End Machine and Revolution Saints on all streaming platforms. And look out for that new End Machine album that's due out soon as well. Once again, I'm Jay Scott. This has been another episode of the Hook Rocks, the Ultimate Rock Community Podcast. Thanks again. Take care of each other. Stay safe, and we will talk soon. Thank you.